We'll start with those film reviews. Godzilla, King of the Monsters, sequel to the 2015 Godzilla reboot. Horror film Ma, which stars Octavia Spencer in the title role. Not the sort of Ma you want to have, I think. And Sunset, which chronicles the end of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. It's set in 1913. With me in studio, Stephen Boyd and Alice Butler. Let's start with the biggie there. The very biggie, in fact, in the case of Godzilla, King of the Monsters. This had a major reboot in 2015. So what's happening here? Is there a relationship, Stephen, between the two? Did you say it was Stephen Boyd and Alice Butler? It is Stephen.
Yeah, it's... hi, Sean. So this film is without Gareth Edwards as director, who had directed Monsters a few years ago and then was taken on board to direct Godzilla. This film is directed by Michael Dougherty. It's set in the same universe as the previous film, but whereas the previous film, Gareth Edwards kind of tried to bring some kind of... realism towards a Godzilla film, which a lot of fans didn't really enjoy. This film goes for a kind of old-fashioned late 1960s, early 1970s Japanese monster versus monster kaiju film. Kaiju being the giant monster genre. So it's set in the same universe as that film from 4 years ago, and it's part of Legendary Pictures' upcoming Monsterverse, as they're calling it. So this is the third film, technically, in a series.
So they're picking up on what Marvel are doing.
Kind of, yeah. So Kong Skull Island with Tom Hiddleston a few years ago was part of this universe and the
Godzillaverse. Monsterverse, surely.
Monsterverse, sorry. Thanks for correcting me, Sean. And the next film is going to be Godzilla versus Kong, which this film is kind of like a setup for.
All right. We have a bundle of monsters here, Alice. Mm. Good monsters, bad monsters, good versus evil. Are we in that territory or is that too simplistic?
I suppose actually with this, with Godzilla, there's always kind of an element of whether Godzilla is sort of a protective or threatening force. But he sort of collides with these three other titans, the three-headed Ghidorah, Rodan and Mothra. And sort of in the background of all of this is this sort of human drama around the Russell family, who we sort of meet at the beginning. Parents,
give us the setup for the family.
So there's parents Emma and Mark who are divorced, who are still sort of recovering after in grief over the death of their son Andrew, who died in a kind of a disaster that ensued after an attack by Godzilla, So Emma is living with her daughter Madison. She's part of this agency called Monarch that seeks to protect Godzilla. And her ex-husband Mark is sort of in retreat. He lives in the wilderness, and he has no feelings of goodwill towards Godzilla at the beginning, anyway.
And Charles Dance, where does he fit into this?
Charles Dance plays Colonel Alan Jonah, I think. I might be wrong in the first name there, who is the head of what seems to be a terrorist organization.
But is it or is it not?
Exactly.
Right. Okay. Something that plays a big role in this is the impending doom of the planet and how we're going to destroy it all ourselves. And here's a clip with Vera Farmiga as Dr. Emma Russell, the mother of the family you were talking about there, Alice. And she's laying out just how we might be able to save ourselves, and you'd never guess who's going to be able to help us.
Our world is changing. The mass extinction we feared has already begun, and we are the cause. We are the infection. But like all living organisms, the Earth unleashed a fever to fight this infection. Its original and rightful rulers, the Titans. For thousands of years, these creatures have remained in hiding around the world. And unless all the Titans are found, our planet will perish, and so will we. They are the only guarantee that life will carry on.
And there I was thinking that I just had to stop driving a diesel or a petrol car. I had to start being more careful with my recycling. But no, I need to give in to Godzilla and friends and all will be well,
you
Stephen.
You need to let them level the entirety of planet Earth. So on the,
and then everything will be okay afterwards.
Yeah, I think so. I suppose there is some intelligence behind this, and that the original Godzilla film, which most people in the West don't realise because it was re-edited when it was shown in America and Europe, was actually a film about the dangers of atomic energy. Mm. And there were lots of new scenes were put in, and that whole message was removed from the original Japanese film. So, I mean, there's some kind of B-movie narrativizing going on here. I don't think this film really has an ecological mindset at the center of its narrative. But it's nice to think that Godzilla could come along and fix everything.
And the monsters themselves, I presume, are in CGI world for these, Alice.
The special effects and the CGI is impressive without actually feeling extraordinary for some reason for me. I think mainly that's because unlike the 2014 or 2015, the last version where there was sort of a slow build, here there's a lot of short scenes. We kind of encounter the monsters quite early on. There isn't that sense of build-up that you really need to have that impact when these monsters finally come on the scene.
And in that clip we just played with a little bit of Debussy, I was listening to some of the part of the film earlier on today as well, or watching a bit of it online, and Somewhere Over the Rainbow seemed to play quite a large role. Is the score important here, and are there those big loud crescendo build ups every time there's a bit of drama?
You know, these kind of scores are so similar in these kind of films, whether it's an action movie, disaster film, a superhero film. You know, it's hard to tell them apart.
You're saying it's formulaic, Stephen?
To some extent, but I like this one just but it was done by Bear McCreary, who anyone who is a fan of Battlestar Galactica, which is something I've talked about on this show a few years ago, will know about Bear McCreary, and he does have a really fun version of Blue Oyster Cult's Godzilla song reworked into the film with kind of a whole chorus of Japanese singers, and this is really highly melodramatic stuff.
Alright, I'm trying to judge from your tone how both of you feel about it. It's kind of a you wanted to like it but you're not quite sure why you're not liking it. Would that be close to it, Alice?
For me, I think a Godzilla film just sort of comes with a set of expectations. You know, there's going to be, monsters trailing over cities and mass destruction and all of these elements. And that comes along here, but I'm not sure there's much else. There's not a new perspective. I mean, I know there's all this sort of discussion around.
And the family story, the Russells? Vera Farmiga and
it becomes irrelevant because it's all about this ensemble cast, so there isn't really a central focus.
Some of that plot with the family is crazy as well. Like some of the plot points and the decisions made by the family members are just things that you'd be scratching your head watching, really.
Yeah. Is there enough in this kind of sequel to make you think, well, they've kind of set up enough here for further films to be able to move in a different direction?
I think so. I mean, I think people are going to pay to see this film because they want to see Godzilla destroying cities and other giant monsters destroying cities. It doesn't have a lot of meat on the bones, but if you are a fan of kaiju films, I think you will enjoy this film. You know,
they also sort of already decided on the Godzilla versus King Kong sequel to this. That's well before this was even finished. Right, I think that's in the
pipeline.
Yeah, absolutely.
Stars from you, Alice.
As I say, I don't think there's enough sort of coherence here or something special about it for me. So 2.5 stars.
What are you saying, Stephen?
I grew up watching old VHS tapes of Godzilla movies from late on Channel 4 on Friday nights. So I
kind of
enjoyed it.
Shouldn't have been doing that. But anyway, go on.
My dad did it. My dad recorded them.
Well done for hanging him.
And 3 out of 5 for me. So I thought it was okay.
Right. Okay, though, as far as you're going. Let's move on then to our second film, Ma, starring Octavia Spencer. You've seen this one, Alice.
Yeah.
What kind of Ma are we talking about in the case of Octavia Spencer?
Pretty creepy. Not one that you'd want to spend much time with. So this is a film really carried by Octavia Spencer, who plays the figure of Ma, or Sue Ann, which is her first name. It's a film that's set in a small town in Ohio, where this character, a teenager called Maggie, has recently moved with her single mother, played really well by her by Juliette Lewis.
And Diane Silvers is playing the character of Maggie.
Diane Silvers, exactly. Yeah, and Maggie Maggie quickly befriends a group from school. They start drinking in the evenings, and they one afternoon stop a local veterinary nurse to ask if she'll buy them alcohol. And not only does she agree to do that, but she says, "Why don't you come back to my house, drink in my basement? We can hang out. The only rule is you can't come up to upstairs."
All right.
To the
let's hear her set the ground rules for the gang when they're in her house. This is Octavia Spencer, and you'll hear several of the gang here. The aforementioned Diana Silvers, Michaeli Miller as a character called Haley, Dante Brown as are playing the part of Daryl, and Andy is played by Corey Fogelmanis. I think there might be a few others in this as well, but Octavia Spencer is the main voice.
Jesus Christ!
Okay, everybody listen up real quick. My only house rules are don't take the Lord's name in vain.
Sorry.
And don't spit on my floors, please. Oh, and you, I'm gonna need your keys. You gotta check in with me before walking out that door, because I gotta know you're safe to drive.
Cool, yeah, fine.
Okay, oh, and nobody go upstairs. That's my world, and right now it's a mess. So you guys are free to do whatever you wanna do down here, but, you know.
Hell yeah. Heck yeah. Thanks, lady.
I'll get you some cups and ice.
Excuse me. You got any pizza rolls, Ma?
Ma? Boy, you are too much. I'll get you some snacks. Go ahead and make yourselves at home.
Guys, this is so sick.
And now hold on a little minute. They go off to, so she gets them the drink, and she follows, she says, no, follow me. They go to a creepy house in the woods, and they go in and have their, and they don't think there's going to be a problem with that.
No, and they don't just do that
of
once.
Course,
they
it is
go
a horror
back
film.
Again and again, and she starts joining them for drinking sessions and partying with them. But it all starts to get very sinister. She sort of becomes obsessive and texts them and tracks them down on Facebook and starts sort of asking them over when they're busy doing other things, I guess.
Yeah, and I don't want to give too much away, but I looked at the trailer and I kind of copped that there's a history here, perhaps with parents of the aforementioned children.
Yeah, and I suppose that's quite canny in terms of a plot device. So she, as it transpires, was in school in the same year as many of the parents of these teenagers.
Yeah, so there's a bit of history. There's old scores to be settled.
There's sort of a trauma that she's still processing that we see in a number of flashback sequences, yeah.
I guess the thing is it scary? Is it believable scary? That's what I want to know about a horror movie.
I think inevitably here you find yourself comparing this to Get Out and other Blumhouse production films.
Yeah, it's the same production company.
Exactly, yeah. And for me, like, this film just doesn't quite kind of fall or at least embrace the kind of horror genre in the way that Get Out does. And it also doesn't offer a kind of searing criticism or commentary on race in the way that film does. It is handled, but it feels very weak. It sort of falls flat for me. But I mean, it's still a lot of fun. Octavia Spencer is totally relishes being in the central role, and she should be. That's where she should be more often than in the supporting roles that she gets more frequently. So there are advantages. There are kind of places where this works, yeah. But it's certainly still flawed. Yeah.
All right. Well, before I get your stars, we'll listen to another little clip featuring Octavia Spencer, give her a chance to show off again, and hear the gang bump into her, and maybe getting to a sense now that she's not quite as cuddly a man as they might have thought initially.
Going for pizza or what?
Hell yeah! I got $9, bitch.
Hey guys.
Hi. Oh, what are you doing here?
I got us a beer pong table, and a keg of Bud Light is on ice if y'all are all down to clown.
I can't tonight. I have to write about historical shipping routes of Africa, so.
Yeah, all those ships with our people in the belly. Ain't that right, Sue Ann?
What about the rest of you guys?
I'm sorry, Ma, I can't. School nights talk for me.
Well, who needs y'all? Girls, you guys want to party like rock stars or what?
No, I gotta clean the house up when my mom gets home. Hey, maybe next time.
Damn, Ma, don't you got a job?
Yeah, I guess I should work a double since you guys don't have time for me.
Girl, you need a man.
Girl, you need to watch your mouth.
Octavia Spencer, and I guess we had most of them again there. Diana Silvers, Michaeli Miller, Dante Brown, and Corey Fogelmanis. The excuses there are kind of the inverse of the dog ate my homework, really.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we don't want to go drinking.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think this film, I think it will work really well for young teenage audiences. I think it just doesn't have that kind of crossover appeal that something like Get Out had, for sure.
Stars then from you, Alice?
I'd say 3 stars because I do think it's worth seeing for Octavia Spencer's performance, and it's not just her that works. Juliette Lewis, as I mentioned before, is really good. Missy Pyle is really great and entertaining.
So they're from their old school pals.
Yeah, exactly. And the only kind of last thing I'd mention is Diana Silvers, who plays the 16-year-old Maggie, who I think is actually really good and convincing in the role, but I think the part could have been meatier. I think actually if she'd been more combative with Octavia Spencer's character, that could have sort of added something to the film overall.
Well, it would have had to have been there in the writing to start out with.
Exactly,
okay, let's move on to our final film then, Sunset. We're in Budapest, 1913. Stephen, tell me how the film opens, actually.
The film has really quite amazing opening. We're thrown right into the life of the central character, Iris, played by her name
Julie Jacko.
In her first screen appearance, this is a woman called Iris Leiter, who's returning to a department store in Budapest from the provincial city of Trieste, where she has or wants to get a job as a hat maker at Leiter's department store, which, as we learn, is probably one of the most prestigious department stores in the Austro-Hungarian Empire. We learn very, very quickly that her parents were the former owners of this department store. And as she kind of almost begs for a job from Oscar Brill, who's the new boss of the department store, we gradually find out things about this character and about the story. But we're never, ever actually told or get an idea of what the plot is.
What exactly is going on. Now, this is the same director, Laszlo Nemes, who won the Oscar for Best Foreign Language Film in 2015. This was Son of Saul.
Yeah.
Just remind us of there are similarities in the way, particularly in the way the lead character brings us through the story here, Alice.
Yeah, absolutely. They're shot by the same cinematographer, and he uses pretty much the same device in both films, which is to basically sort of stalk the lead character. We don't get any distance from them whatsoever. It's a kind of an entirely subjective view of their experience.
So in the case of Son of Saul, it was a Holocaust movie, and we're in a concentration camp, but we're not even seeing the peripheral vision of the character. We don't get big wide views of the horrors that are going on around him.
No establishing shots, and the sort of picture of the world that these characters live in is built up as much hourly as by the world around, the visual sort of world around them. There's a lot of soft focus, which leaves sort of space for the viewer to sort of fill that in themselves. So it's really about sort of just kind of completely immersing yourself in that character's experience.
Yeah, and when you think about this character in particular, working in this milliner's, as this hat shop, essentially, and she's in Budapest, never mind the characters in the shop and the hats they might be wearing, just pan out and let's see a bit of Budapest.
Yeah.
It would look great.
Yeah.
Does the idea of keeping you just in the focus of the lead character, does that work?
I thought it worked almost all of the time. But as the film progressed, I felt more and more like I wanted some space. It was almost claustrophobic. Mm. I mean,
I presume that's the desired effect.
Yeah, I think so. And in Son of Saul, that works absolutely perfectly because that's set in a Nazi death camp. Whereas this is, the end of the grandeur of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, and we don't ever really get to see it. Now, I still, in my mind, don't know whether that's a good or a bad thing. Mm. It's a very, very intelligent device, cinematically, to simply follow the central character around, almost at close-up level, for the entire film, either from the back of the character or from the front of the character, and only really seeing what they're seeing in their almost immediate vision. I thought that works to some extent, but as the film went on, I was a little less enamoured with
that. Yeah, now what we're getting here is this young woman who gets the job in the hat shop, and we find out there's a family connection there.
Yeah.
But then a whole load of other I don't know whether they're just coincidences or how well knitted in the various other plot devices are, Alice.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, it's unfair to constantly refer back to Son of Saul, but there was a sort of a clarity to the central character's motivation. He discovers this young boy and feels that believes it's his son and wants to bury this boy.
Yes, so we can understand why he would want to do that.
And that's what drives the entire film is this compulsion to do that.
In the case of Iris
and Sunset, there's a sort of constantly shifting set of motivations. Initially, she wants to work in the hat store. They won't hire her. Then she discovers she has a brother. She tries to find him. She does find him. Then she sort of has an ambivalent reaction to him as a person. And then she sort of finds this drug-addled countess and it sort of goes down this path for a while. So there's no sort of...
You don't understand why she's taking all of these twists and turns.
No, but I think what Laszlo Niemes seems to be interested in doing is giving us a sort of a portrait of this society just on the verge of its collapse. And Iris as a character is compelling because she is interested in looking at the underbelly and going into spaces where she's not at all welcome. And because she's sort of not... willing to be contained, it makes her sort of a really compelling force.
Yeah, but I guess if you're going to look at the collapse of society or the collapse of the Austro-Hungarian Empire in this case, you might would be happy to see just one person's perspective, but you'll need other characters to lead you and bring you along with the story. Well, do we get any other characters to help us?
I'm not actually sure that was his intention to show the end of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. I don't think that would...
Sunset suggests he's looking at the end of something,
but I read in an interview with him where he said he went and looked up the history of the period and found nothing interesting. Now, I couldn't believe that when I read that, but that's what he, in this month's site,
it had nothing to do with the First World War or the Second World War.
Exactly. Well, a lot of the narrative could have been set in any Western country of the time, and if you actually remove the setting, a lot of that is true. And I suppose I wanted that aspect of the plot to be explored further. I wanted, what was this telling me about the end of the empire? And I'm not sure that it told me a huge amount.
And I see in your notes, Alice, you said 107 minutes for Son of Saul. Here we go again, comparing it with Son of Saul. And that was fine. 2 hours and 20 minutes in the case of Sunset, and that was far from fine, I got the impression.
Yeah, I have to say, even though I would really encourage people to go and see this and certainly see this as well as Son of Saul, I think this is a director who's really significant and important and definitely has ideas for how cinema can develop artistically. But I would be lying if I didn't say, you know, after... you know, 120 minutes or whatever, I was sort of looking at my watch and wondering, you know, when is this wrapping up?
All right. Stars from you, first of all, Alice.
As I say, I do think this is still absolutely worth seeing. She's a difficult character to spend time with. She's sort of constantly in distress, but I also found her really compelling, and I liked her drive to sort of go into spaces that other people were shying away from. So 4 stars.
And what are you saying, Stephen?
Yeah, I had initially thought 3.5, and more of kind of dwelt on this film and thought about it, 4 out of 5. It is something that people should see. It's enigmatically brilliant, but it does have flaws as well. Julie Jacobs' performance in the central role is brilliant for someone who's on screen for almost the 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Total newcomer, isn't she?
Yeah.
All right. That's Stephen Boyd and Alice Butler speaking to us about Sunset, the final film there, which is on limited release. And before that, Ma and Godzilla, King of the Monsters, both of which are on general release.